Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, first heard here on the station each Tuesday at 1 p.m, or you can catch us again Thursday evenings at 9, or if you prefer a podcast, well, that drops each Friday. Just ask your smart speaker to play RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, Tech Talk, it's your programme. It's our opportunity to come together as blind and partially sighted people and explore the world of technology. And we're always keen to hear from you. You can drop us an email. It's the usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K, at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the latest updates to Good Maps, including the use of 3D audio. I'll be speaking with Drew Mochak from Meta about his role at WhatsApp, and Hubert will be along with a demonstration of the Apple TV set-top box from a blind and partially sighted perspective. That's all to come this week on Tech Talk. Before we get started, let's welcome in our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Gentlemen, hello, how are you?
Well, good, Dave, how are you?
Smash in. Callum?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Well, I say not too bad. I've got a bit of something going on, a bit of a cold. I'll just, don't mind me, I'll just keep my distance a little bit.
Well, that's all right. Well, look, we'll rattle through this and then you can go for a lie down. Tell us, what's on your tech radar this week, Callum Stoneman?
Well, I've ordered a new fridge freezer earlier this week. And
he knows how to have a good time, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Loving life, me. But because it's 2023, you couldn't just buy a normal fridge freezer. That'd be ridiculous. So it does have Wi-Fi.
It's got a Wi-Fi fridge.
Apparently, you can connect it to your network and you can control the temperature and the settings remotely. Not too bothered about that, to be honest. I can't remember the last time I changed the settings. But the bit that's sort of intriguing me a little bit is apparently you can put in the expiry dates of the products that are on that you've got in your fridge freezer, and you can keep track of them via the app. And obviously, you don't need to splash out on a, you know, new fridge freezer to do that. There's other ways of doing it, but if it's there, I may as well use it. And I'm just curious to see. I'm looking forward to seeing if that's accessible and what the integration's like. You know, does it tie into smart speakers and other things like that?
Yeah, so, well, you have to let us know how straightforward that is. Is it a bit of a fafarama, you know, to find the expiry date in the first place and then type it into an app and all of that, or are you just better off doing the old sniff test?
Well, yeah, there is that. There is the sniff test, obviously, but I didn't intend to go for a smart fridge freezer. We just worked it out after we'd ordered it. We saw that was available, so, you know, if it's there, I may as well try it out. If it's any good, I might give a little demo of it, maybe.
Now, Hubert, I know you're along later with your demonstration of the Apple TV. Anything else in your inbox?
Mainly the strange rebranding of Twitter that's been kind of heavily debated in my various circles, because it's now going to be called X and your tweets are going to be called X's, and it just all sounds a bit, yeah.
I'm not going to be talking about my X's, I can tell you that. this is not the show for that.
But moving swiftly on. All right, gentlemen, great stuff. Thank you so much. Welcome in. It is Tech Talk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio now, with outdoor navigation being a prominent topic here on Tech Talk recently, especially with the announcement of Good Maps Outdoors app having a 3D audio feature. We thought we will catch up with Good Maps, and joining me now is the Good Maps Chief Commercial Officer, Neil Barnfather. Neil, welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So if we start with finding out what the outdoors product from Good Maps is, could you tell us a bit more about it?
Of course, absolutely. So Outdoors is actually a combination of several decades worth of development, starting back in the days of the Sendero product range, and roughly 2011-12, as the community began looking towards the iPhone particularly, Sendero saw that an opportunity to expand that range and move it, you know, I suppose offer it in a dual sense, and not only on many of the Braille note takers and products like that that they that people were familiar using that product on, but also make it available on the iPhone. So the app that people were familiar with using in the sort of adaptive technology sense morphed across to become an iPhone app. And it was available, obviously, in the US, across parts of Europe, and indeed as far afield as Australia. And effectively, the thing that's really important to remember on that is that it is many, many years worth of development, of feature implementation, and really getting it in that spot. So, you know, that's sort of the history of it. What it is, in essence, a navigational tool for the outdoors built from the ground up to serve our needs, as opposed to taking a street level GPS navigation product and then adapting that. So building in features that might make it helpful for our community. This particular product was built from the ground up to support our needs. And that's really the magic that's different in comparison, say, Google Maps or an Apple Maps. The sort of recent evolution of that, obviously the product became part of the Good Maps family a year or so ago now. And under that stewardship, we've continued to have funding through several of the well-known blindness organizations throughout the world to continue to develop that product. And ostensibly, the most important thing there is keep it free of charge to our community and bring that to those markets. And, you know, users can expect to receive from the product not only turn-by-turn navigational instructions outdoors when walking through the streets, you know, guiding them where they want to go, but they'll also be able to hear about what's around them. So what building they might be passing, points of interest that around, they can drop beacons and other important landmarks. They can mark those, and those are portable between devices. So you have an account, they're able to, if you change your phone, etc., they get with you. All of the features really that you'd expect, but tailor-made for us. So a key example might be the intersection announcement. So instead of simply hearing that, you know, turn right here, but you've just crossed over five other intersections on the way, Good Maps Outdoors announces those and describes them importantly. So it's a freeway junction, it's a four-way junction and so forth, and gives you that extra piece of information that could be very beneficial to us as blind and low vision users.
Now, the latest addition to the Outdoors app has been the 3D audio feature that we have briefly mentioned on Tech Talk. Could you tell us more about how this new feature works?
Absolutely. So with what I mentioned earlier in terms of the way the product's funded, what we do is we take feedback, which is sort of compiled through the various blindness organizations that support the product. Effectively, they have a pivotal input into, you know, what's coming next, developmental features. So it's absolutely critical that we keep that involvement from those key stakeholders. And effectively, we got to the latter part of last year, and Microsoft announced that Soundscape would be sunset as an app, meaning that it would no longer not only be supported, but more than that, they were physically going to stop servicing the data source that was required to make that work. And whilst Soundscape had some usability and some very nice features that our community enjoyed using, it wasn't a full navigational tool. But what it really let you do was understand the orientation of a particular target destination, and indeed multiple targets at any one point in time. But it gave you this acoustically, and also, you know, how sort of became described three-dimensionally. So instead of sound hitting you, if you had a sort of stereo headset, a left and a right headset, instead of just simply hearing that at equal volume in both ears at the same time, or indeed if you had, you know, one earpiece in, etc., what it would let you do is understand in a spatial sense whether the item being announced was ahead of you, behind you, left, right, and indeed even more granular than that, one could get a perception as to whether the item was at, say, for example, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or and so forth without that information being announced. So effectively, the sort of real world example of that might be that as you're approaching a street that you're going to cross on the right hand side of the road, at the furthest point that the app might announce it, you would hear that almost very close to 12 o'clock. It would almost be central in your headset. And as you got a little bit closer, you might hear it announced. And this is, it's very effective. It almost sounds as if it, the announcement's coming marginally more from the right, a little bit less from the left. But you, so it helps you sort of understand direction. Then as you're getting even closer, you'll hear it really moving to the right. And as you're crossing the street, any announcement physically about that item will only come from the right earpiece. And then as you walk away, the idea is that it'll then drift into back and right. And they sort of do a little bit of clever magic with tone of the announcement to make it almost emulate as if the announcement was coming from behind you. And that's effectively what happens. And we've been able to, obviously Microsoft made that the source code for Soundscape open source, which allowed developers such as us to understand the mechanics of that. And then we've incorporated that feature into Good Maps Outdoors, allowing our users to benefit from that particular experience. And it, you know, it really is, as a blind person myself, it really does tie up those two pieces of both turn-by-turn navigation along with a far better understanding of where the item is that's being announced to you.
So just to clarify, did you use the Soundscape open source code, or was this something that has been created as a separate feature?
So we used... I wouldn't want to specifically answer that, you know, in the context of I'm not 100% au fait with how our development team did that. So I shall give a half and half answer. They certainly referenced and accessed that source code and looked at it. I'm not actually certain if the Soundscape language, the coding language, is identical to the code that's utilized for Good Maps Outdoors. So it may have been, as with other companies that have utilized some of the Soundscape source code, it may have been that they simply used it as a reference. Effectively, you know, source code is an architect's blueprint as to how you do something in a code, in a particular coding language. And one can choose to copy and paste and then insert that, or indeed look at the architectural methodology of how something's achieved and then replicate that in another language. And I'm not 100% au fait with which approach was used in our circumstance, but in essence, the Soundscape functionality was replicated as a result of that knowledge point.
And what has been the response from the blind and partially sighted community who have used your 3D audio feature? Have you gotten any feedback from users about it?
Yes, we've received some very positive and warm feedback. Obviously, not just from the UK, but as I mentioned, you know, it's a truly international product, and we've received good, positive, warm feedback. So you know, it's a great feature to bring in. As I've sort of talked about, you know, Soundscape did this, but only from the point of view of points of interest. Good Maps Outdoors guided you, but without the 3D sound. Now we've combined those two features. So naturally, there's positivity and happiness and all that goes with that. We never consider it job done. You know, there's more features to be built, more items to be incorporated and so forth. But yes, the response has been absolutely a positive one.
Now, speaking of future developments, are there any future developments you could share, or new features being worked on, or enhancements to the existing features of the app?
So I think some of the other things that we haven't touched upon, we included, for example, Siri shortcuts in this release. So the ability now, instead of having to launch the app and then, you know, rummage through the menus or, you know, perform a search and then create the routes, you can now actually create Siri shortcuts straight from in the app. It's incredibly easy to do. And this allows you, and I should, by the way, say, I talk about this from an iPhone standard. That's simply because I myself am an iPhone user. But the other major point is Soundscape was never available on Android previously. Whereas what we've done is released Good Maps Outdoors and incorporated that feature into Android. So when I talk about Siri shortcuts, for example, we equally have the Google Assistant equivalent in our product. So that's an important feature. We effectively, you know, if one assumes that internationally, iPhone and Android are sort of split equally within the user groups, you know, we equally had that benefit that we've now doubled the amount of people in the reach of the product. But so Siri shortcuts and as I say, Google Assistant shortcuts allow you to verbally instruct the app from your home screen. So instead of having to launch the app and find the item you're looking for and then set a course, etc., you can talk to Siri and say, in essence, create a route to insert address using Good Maps Outdoors in pedestrian mode and, or, you know, indeed in car mode and so forth. And that triggers the app launching, it triggers the address automatically being populated, and the route just begins. So complete hands-free interaction with the app, which was a long requested feature that we've now brought to the app as well. In terms of future road mapping, we're actually in the middle of looking to what the future holds and how that specifically looks. One of the features I think is would be nice to bring in that we haven't yet completely done is the addition of the tones that go with the 3D sound. So for example, at the moment, it's the synthesized voice that's the three-dimensional sound piece of what we've brought into the app. But many Soundscape users will be familiar with the fact that the app also had a tone that sort of almost pulsed at you and would change its intensity depending on whether the item that was being tracked was to the left, to the right, forwards, backwards, etc. So that's sort of something that I would like to see, and obviously I'm you know, putting my vote towards. But I think that's the kind of thing one could look to see. And there's obviously always other features from a getting people on board with that and really helping influence that. Ultimately, going back to what I talked about earlier, the way this tends to work is, yes, we look to user feedback and user requests, but we are very much guided by the organizations that partner with us to, you know, to guide that and, you know, as almost experts in their region to understand what their users want.
What are your kind of personal hopes for the future of technology-based outdoor navigation for blind and partially sighted people?
I think that's a wonderful question. And some of the things I think that would be great to see is really bringing some of the information together. So when I look to what's available in some of the sort of mainstream navigation products, is really the accumulation of data sources. So, you know, if you look for a hotel in Google Maps, for example, you will end up not only seeing the hotels around you, but you can actually also overlay the prices that are currently available. And that's just one example, you know, and that's actually quite difficult to get at as a blind user. And then there's other items. So for example, you know, public transport modes in some of the mainstream products are quite, you know, good if you're sighted and able to really understand them. Apple Maps, for example, you know, very good. I've watched a colleague use that in Berlin relatively recently, where we were able to sort of go down into the metro system and you were able to really understand, oh, no, gone down the wrong platform and got to go across and go that way. And that sort of functionality, we as blind users really do struggle to access and experience with any, you know, degree of parity. And I think what I really like to see on a personal level is if we are ultimately going to bridge the gap as a, you know, community and get towards that parity point, we need an equality of access to information. The world is increasingly becoming sort of almost not just connected in that way. We've all talked about, you know, the connected, always on culture and so forth. But if you don't have easy, you know, access to that data set, it's incredibly difficult. And it does feel that we are sometimes incredibly level set in, you know, oh, that's fantastic, great. You know, we've got access at the same time as everyone else. And there are other times we're behind. And, you know, we are already in a situation where, for all the reasons that have been, you know, spoken about, written about, documented, researched over decades and decades, as a community, we are in a negative equity position on that. So the more that can be done to level set and ensure that we have that equality, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So certainly, you know, as we move closer and closer to, you know, things like connected autonomous vehicles and all the rest of, it is going to be ever more important to ensure that the data is available. What good, for example, is it? Let's pretend self-driving cars were here tomorrow. So, you know, many, many blind people sort of restrict themselves to the routes they know, the places they go frequently, because they've had O&M training. They've had an experience of that, family member or friends taking them there, and they understand where they've got to go. And, you know, it requires a huge amount of mental concentration and confidence to go outside of those spaces. That's not to say many of our community members don't do that on a frequent basis, but nevertheless, it's a challenge that others don't experience in the same way and at the same intensity that we do. So now imagine a world where I've got my self-driving car and the world is my oyster. I can get in that vehicle and drive wherever. It is going to be absolutely paramount importance that when I get there and I get out of that vehicle, that I'm able to, you know, gain access to that wealth of digital data that my sighted peers would have access to, so that I can access that environment and not just, well, I made it to the car park, now what? I haven't had O&M training here. I haven't got a family member or friend. What do I do now I'm here? So that's sort of, I guess, for me, where I would be very interested in seeing the apps of the future, or indeed the iterations of the current apps, looking to address.
Fantastic. Neil Barnfather, Chief Commercial Officer at GoodMaps. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
During our visit to the NFB 2023 convention in Houston, Texas, I met a gentleman, Drew Mochak, who is a blind IT professional working for WhatsApp. And I thought it would be fantastic for us to have a little bit of a catch up with Drew, learn more about his career, some of the tools that he uses, and talk about accessibility in the social media space. Welcome in to RNIB Connect Radio, Drew.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What can you tell us about your role at WhatsApp? What do you do and how long have you been there?
Sure. So I've been with them for a couple of years. I got started out kind of in an unusual way, because I started out doing testing for Google, actually doing this just for like their central QA team as a vendor. They sort of have this, you know, there's employees and then there's contractors and then there's vendors who work full time and temps who work some of the time, and there's a whole bunch of different designers. So I did that. So it's like you're kind of there, but you're kind of not, and it was a little weird. So I did that for a few years, which is great because it gave me a whole lot of really awesome experience in a whole bunch of different areas. That allowed me to go and work for WhatsApp, and I was really excited by the opportunity to help connect people, because it has such a huge amount of impact on people, and a lot of people use it for like essential everyday stuff. So to be able to work on something like that was humbling and really exciting. So what I do there is I'm described as a technical specialist. So the way I sort of describe it is that there's, you know, sort of the stickiness, I guess, the glue between that sort of sticks the users of the product to the engineers. And there's a whole lot of people who go into that process to making sure that people's, you know, heard and we get stuff addressed in a timely manner. And I'm on the engineering side of the glue. So my role is sort of translating that into like concrete asks for the product and making sure to really like drive that to a solution so that the engineers know, like, you know, what is the stuff that we really need to be focusing on right now, and how do we do that, and connecting them to solutions and making sure that all that gets prioritized.
And what attracted you to working in tech? Is it something you always wanted to do?
Yeah, I guess I've always been just had a tech affinity, and maybe that's sort of a part of a consequence of growing up when you are blind and also have, you know, access to a fair amount of technology. When you're in the US, there's a lot of government services that can sort of connect you to things that you can just get on loan or on rent from, you know, libraries and stuff. And so I was able to, you know, like I went through school, I had note takers, you know, like the Braille light, you know, all that stuff. And so that I was using technology from a young age, so I sort of can sort of speak the language a bit. And also, you know, one thing it's just using technology with a disability is hard, you know, even if we have all of these things that we make, like screen readers and stuff, to the assistive technologies, Braille displays, hearing aids, everything, to make things better, you know, easier. It's still difficult. It's way more difficult to use a screen reader than to, you know, to use a phone. So you kind of have to sort of to speak that language a little bit, just to sort of be, you know, a power user of the tech to like really, you know, be effective. So I've felt like that the skills that I have that other people might not necessarily have is something that would be marketable in a certain way. And it turned out to be correct.
And how does WhatsApp make sure that the app is useful for people with diverse needs? What specific features or design choices have been made to support accessibility?
This was one of an interesting misconception that I had. I've said a few times, like I have this weird belief in systems working that is tested by my day-to-day life. And, you know, for accessibility, I think there's sort of an expectation that everything just sort of, you just show up and like, oh, well, if you just follow this thing, then it will just work and everything will be perfect. And, you know, but, first of all, that's not necessarily true, but more to the point, nobody follows the thing anyway. So you sort of have to deal with that. So like pretty much anything that works, didn't get there by accident. You know, at any time you see, you know, like on voiceover action, someone just says, you know, actions available to try, but, you know, so that didn't just happen, right? Somebody built that, went out of their way to like make that happen on an engineering team somewhere. But then also, you know, that's just the macro, obviously, you know, getting, you know, there's features as well. Like, you know, we have variable font size on, you know, on most of the platforms that help you read the text. You know, we just launched, I'm really happy about, we just launched the alternate, the ability to link a device on the web without using the QR code. So yeah, we're working, you know, as hard as we can to try and bring changes to people as quickly as possible.
And sometimes mainstream features have unexpected accessibility benefits. I remember sharing with you in Houston how ahead of the London Marathon, I was trying to meet up with my guide runner and my, you know, my ride sharing service dropped me in an unexpected location, let's say. And my guide runner uses a different mobile platform to me, which is always a joy. So we had to try and figure out how we were going to meet each other. And actually, sharing live location through WhatsApp turned out to be the solution for that. Have you heard about that sort of thing happening?
I've done that, actually. Well, similar sorts of things is, yeah, when I'm trying to meet somebody, I'll be like, hey, where are you at? Where are you at? And I'll share my location and, you know, that will help, you know, like, oh, you're near there or whatever. And then we can get on a call. So, yeah, I do think that I've definitely used WhatsApp in the past as a mobility tool. And it's been really valuable that way.
What do you think are some of the challenges that we as blind users face when accessing messaging applications like WhatsApp and what work is being done to try and address that?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I actually, one of the things that I really like about WhatsApp, I mean, messaging apps in general, but WhatsApp, I feel like we've really like taken this on as a design principle to be, you know, simple. And reliable. And so, you know, as a result of that works really well with accessibility, right? Because that we like simple and reliable. It makes things, you know, simple and reliable, robust.
Well, robust is one of the principles, isn't it? That's one of the W3Cs, you know, in their perceivable, operable, understandable. Robust is the one that people forget about, and reliability, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so like that does like help in terms of the specific accessibility lift of making things, you know, so the generally the answer to a problem is just, oh, make it work, you know, the way it's supposed to work in the app for everyone. And you sort of get, because, you know, you don't have to get in the, you know, like, oh, this UI is getting in the way, like that isn't too much of a problem. So like where I see we do have problems is, you know, things I hear about a lot are like notification overload, you know, oh, why won't this thing shut up? It's got all these things talking to me and I'm trying to get my work done and it keeps coming up with this thing and I have to mute this group and can't, you know, organize this thing. And this is a lot of the same stuff that I hear from lots of other people too, you know, who, you know, don't necessarily identify as having disabilities. So it's actually just, in that sense, it's sort of just a matter of that education piece for me is being like, so this thing, and there's a lot of stuff with I think like low vision is a similar thing, like, oh, with contrast, you know, it's like, oh, this is hard to read, but if you you know, have a certain eye condition, you know, like instead of hard, it's impossible. So just making that sort of point that like, well, if you guys are finding this like annoying for someone who's using this with a screen reader, it can actually be really, really excruciating. So yeah, for me, it's the challenge is mostly around finding, you know, places in the UI that are really cluttered and maybe over announcing too much and finding ways to minimize on that. I would say, you know, is one of my main ongoing challenges at a high level for things to make better.
Sure, software rarely stands still and new features will be introduced. How do we make sure that accessibility is a consideration in that build process? You'll be aware that often accessibility is an afterthought, and sometimes, you know, we have to kind of try and retrofit the accessibility. How do we get that earlier in the process when it comes to new feature development?
Sure. So the buzzword of the industry now is shift left. Everything is shifting left, which is just sort of the concept of do everything you were doing sooner, right? But I, you know, accessibility is definitely, it's super important to get that right first, because it can actually, if you do it right, it can kind of inform some of your other design considerations that you're making down the road, right? Like, oh, well, we determined that, you know, folks with disabilities are going to have problems with this, so we decided to go this route instead. And since we did that, now our problem state is different. So that can help you solve problems earlier on. And so we do that through like a number of different ways. We have, you know, we have a group of testers that looks at everything. We have, you know, we look at the product every day and we send feedback. Like everyone at the, you know, we all look at the product and new features. And if there's feedback, you know, we send that in. Sometimes it's voiceover feedback. And then, you know, we also look at that and make sure that, you know, we get notified when stuff's coming through, and we make sure that we take a look at it. You know, it's not always perfect, obviously, but I think we do, you know, as I would put us up, you know, compare us with anyone else in the industry in terms of the features that we ship to production that are accessible. at launch, what I see a lot of is like, oh, we launched the thing, but it's not quite accessible yet. So give us 2 weeks or give us a month or give us, you know, half a year or whatever. And I'm really proud of the fact that we generally do not do that.
How much do you hear from the community of blind WhatsApp users? And have you been involved with anything that you've then seen the kind of the results of that in the community?
Probably the thing, yeah, that I would say I'm most proud of would be the launch of the native Windows app, because that we were working on that right around the time when I joined a couple of years ago, and so I was able to get in at the ground level of that really and say like, oh, so here's, you know, this is really great, I love this, but there are a bunch of missing things here, and this is what, you know, we need to fix now. And you know, making those contacts with, you know, folks on the team who are working to solve that stuff was really great. And and then seeing afterwards the feedback afterwards was that when we launched, we got some really positive reviews. I don't remember who it was. I remember one in particular that I treasured was comparing it to Unigram, which is I think the open source client on Windows that is for Telegram, that a lot of people you know told me was very, I haven't used it, but I've heard a lot of, I can't, they actually banned me from Telegram. I don't know why, but anyway, everyone told me that Unigram was like, you know, the app in terms of accessibility on Windows, and then I have reviews saying that this is, you know, on par with or better in certain ways, and that having that feedback was fantastic. It was like, yay, I showed up and I made a difference and it meant something to people, and that's amazing. And that was really great.
Yeah, so that they do read the reviews, guys. So, you know, good or bad or indifferent, leave reviews. Somebody's going to read it. Yeah, no, that's reassuring. So what's in your eye line, Drew? I mean, what areas would you really like to kind of see improvement in?
Oh, man, there's lots of stuff. Like I say, yeah, I would love to see, I'm really happy about I mentioned earlier that we released the alternative to the QR code so that you can log in with to web companions to with just using it, having an 8-character code displayed and put that in on your phone. Love to see that expand more to, you know, to the other clients. We're looking at, you know, transcriptions for voice messages. That I'd love to see that expand a bit more to like other devices and things. And there's lots of stuff I really think is interesting personally is actually the WhatsApp business app. It's sort of under talked about because not a lot of people really know about it, but the WhatsApp app is sort of a place where you can have like business it's basically WhatsApp, but there are also features that can support a business, like you can, you know, put in a catalog of things that you want, or you can come up with like custom responses so that you can like have bots message people to auto generate responses like, oh, I want to get this order, okay, so this will be this, and it will cost that, how much do you want, you know, you can have like generated responses. And I think I would love to see more development of people using that sort of stuff. I want to see like more interesting, you know, blind people trying to use that, and, you know, use cases for how they can use WhatsApp to, you know, make money and make their business more efficient. And also the chat piece with support, I'd love to hear more, get more feedback from folks we have. So we recently implemented a chat in the app, so you can go to the contact. If you go to settings and then help, then contact WhatsApp. If you're having a problem, you can just put that in the chat. Really want to encourage people to use that, because that way, you know, the more feedback we get, the more, you know, the more we can learn about how folks are using the app, and the better we can, you know, help that. And especially, you know, folks with disabilities are writing in, they have some, you know, some pretty specific problems sometimes. And so the more we can learn about that by having more people, you know, use those feedback mechanisms, the better signal we can have to get stuff routed and handled. So, you know, I would love to see more development of that also.
And from your perspective, Drew, what role do you think the tech industry has in advancing the cause of accessibility and inclusivity? You'll be aware of Jonathan Mosen's presentation at NFB 23, where he called on the tech industry to try and agree some standards, you know, so that we don't see accessibility regressions quite so much. Do you have any thoughts around any of that?
For me personally, tech has played a huge role in my own ability to, I mean, I work in tech, so obviously, you know, tech has played a huge role just in that. But like, you know, that aside, you know, I was starting to say earlier, grew up with tech. It, you know, it allowed me to get my work done in school. It helped me get educated. It helps me read stuff. You know, I think back to, you know, and a lot of this stuff, it just happened to exist when I was growing up. You know, if I'd been born, you know, 20 years earlier or something like that and miss out on all this, my life's gonna be a whole lot harder. I'm gonna have to fight a whole lot harder in order to have the same quality of life that I have. So as tech definitely has the potential to be a flattener for inequality in this way, and it has done that in the past. And so I think it just needs to keep on doing that. Yes, there's a lot of problems and a lot of frustrations that a lot of, you know, I myself have expressed on more often than not. My now orphaned Twitter profile is a testament to all the, you know, particularly 10 years ago, to all the, you know, anger and frustration I had at the tech industry at the time. But I would still take all of those challenges that we have today against the challenges that we had 30 years ago when none of this stuff existed. So I think we just need to, you know, keep on in terms of holding us to account. You know, the laws that are coming out of Europe look really interesting. The ADA so far has been a very carefully negotiated balance of interests that has served everyone pretty well so far. And so I think, you know, we make progress, and maybe it's not as fast as we would like, but it is always moving forward. I have yet to see many areas where you could see like things have gotten worse. Now, I mean, you can talk about like how, like on the web, maybe things have regressed in certain ways in the macro, but like just on the daily living spectrum, it feels like things are on the whole getting better. And so that's the thing that I always keep in mind.
You mentioned WhatsApp's Windows app. Are there any other specific projects or initiatives that you've been involved with that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, definitely plugging the Windows app and the QR code project that I was pretty happy. That was something that, you know, it took a while to make happen. But because of how many, you know, different teams have to come together to make a thing like that happen, because you can't, you know, it has to get support in all the different clients and everything and serving and all the different pieces. So that was, you know, a bit challenging, but seeing it roll out recently and have people react really positively to that has been very it's been a long time coming, so it's very satisfying to see finally come to fruition.
Thanks to Dave for that conversation with Drew Merchak from Meta, and we'll be hearing more from Drew in next week's show.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
One of the big modern technology inventions is a smart TV. Now, what is a smart TV, you ask? Well, it's simply like a smartphone. So a TV that can do a lot more functions besides being able to watch your standard TV channels. So you can have various apps just like you can on a smartphone, whether it's to watch the latest iPlayer programs or watch the latest hit shows on services like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Apple TV Plus, or Disney Plus, to name but a few. You can also have games on it. You can also do video calls, or for example, look at your photos. These are just a few things you can do on a smart TV. Now, a lot of smart TVs these days have built-in accessibility features. So TVs from companies, for example, such as Samsung or LG, to name a few, do have built-in accessibility features such as screen readers. And these accessibility features make them quite accessible. However, not all apps are accessible with that built-in technology, which is why today's demo comes into play, because what we will demonstrate to you is a smart TV system that you can connect to your existing TV, and one of them is the Apple TV. Now, there are a few of these out there. The other well-known one is, of course, the Amazon Fire Stick, which, again, you can connect to any TV to make it a smart TV. So you don't need a smart TV in the first place in order to connect these devices. And a lot of these connectable smart TVs are fairly accessible. So the Amazon Fire Stick, for example, has the Voice View screen reader, which you can then use to access what's on the Amazon Fire Stick. And the Apple TV has the built-in Apple screen reader voiceover. What's important to keep in mind is that third-party apps might not be all that accessible on every smart TV device. So, for example, it has been known that the iPlayer apps from the BBC, ITV, and Channel 4 and Channel 5 have had accessibility issues on services like the Fire Stick or the LG smart TVs, where they couldn't really be accessed by screen reader users. I've had that experience myself on the Fire Stick a few years ago. I'm not sure if that is still the case because I've not been using the Fire Stick for a while, but I remember because they used what was called the WebView, apps such as BBC iPlayer, ITVX, or Channel 4 were not very accessible and required sighted assistance. So, why am I showing you the Apple TV? Well, because most apps on the Apple TV are very much accessible. So apps like BBC iPlayer and the iPlayer services I've mentioned above are amongst some of the apps that are accessible on the Apple TV, which is what we'll show you today. Now, for this demonstration, a few things to keep in mind. In order to use the Apple TV, you will have to switch to the HDMI port on your TV. For example, if you've been watching standard TV channels on the modern accessible smart TVs, this is very easy to do, but this is something we will not demonstrate in this demo. So for the purposes of this, I have already switched us to the HDMI channel on the TV in order for me to use my connected Apple TV. So let's first describe you the Apple TV itself. It's a fairly small unit. It's about 3 times the size of a Ring box, so fairly small and doesn't really take up much space. It's got an Apple logo on it with the word TV next to it. And it's got 3 ports at the back. One of them is for the power cable, which on one end plugs into the TV box and on the other plugs into the wall. Next to that is the HDMI cable, which you plug in to your TV and to the Apple TV box itself. And the other port will allow you to connect an internet cable so you can have a wired internet connection if you need, although it does use Wi-Fi, so that should not really be needed. The Apple TV also comes with a small remote with a small amount of buttons. It's a rechargeable remote, and the battery life on it is very long. I believe I've had this Apple TV for 2 years and I still not have to charge the remote once. It's a very flat remote. It's a long rectangular device, about the size of a small voice recorder. It has 6 buttons on the device. So the first row, buttons going from top to bottom, you have the menu button. Below that, you have the Siri button. And below that, you have the play button. The row to the right of that has the home button at the top, then a volume button, a long volume button, which is volume up and volume down. Now, this is an old version of the Siri remote. There is a newer version out there, but because of the Apple TV that I have, I do not have the new version of the remote. So the one I've described is an older version. Now, above the buttons, there is a trackpad. Now, what this means, it's a touch gesture area where you can do various familiar voiceover gestures. And the trackpad also works as a double tap gesture by clicking the trackpad like you would a button, which I will demonstrate in a minute. Below the button is a gloss smooth finish, which doesn't really have anything relevant to it. And on the bottom of the remote is the charging port where you can plug in a cable to charge the remote. And you can use the cable that comes with your iPhone, but you also get one with the Apple TV. So to quickly show you a few main things that you need to know about the Apple TV. First of all is the navigation. Now on iPhones and iPads, you may be used to doing swipe left and swipe right and one finger double tap. Most of this applies to the Apple TV as well, with a few little differences, and we will go through these things today. The important thing in the Apple TV interface is that you not only use swipe left and right with one finger, but you will also need to swipe up or down. So two extra gestures to navigate, and I'll explain to you how this works. So currently on the screen, we have a grid of squares, if you can picture that. And each square represents an app, and it's a grid of five squares in each row. So we are in the top row currently. So I will swipe away from the first icon because I've located us in the first icon in the first row.
Music, row 1, column 2, top shelf content available.
So it said music, row 1, column 2. I will swipe to the right again.
Photos, row 1, column 3, no top shelf content. Arcade, row 1, column 4, top shelf content available. Fitness, row 1, column 5, top shelf content available.
Now, as you can hear, we have reached the end of this row. Now, on iPhones and iPads, VoiceOver would automatically move on to the next row. That isn't what happens on the Apple TV. On the Apple TV, you will have to do that yourself. Now, there's two ways you can do this. If you want to go to the start of the second row, you will have to swipe to the left a few times until you reach the first icon in the top row. So in this case, it's TV and it would say row 1, column 1. Or the other option is you can swipe down and move into the second row, and instead of going forwards through the row and swiping to the right, you will have to go backwards through the row by swiping to the left. So I'll show you this.
Search row 2, column 5.
So I've swiped down and it said row 2, column 5, and instead of going forwards through the row, we will go backwards through it. I'll swipe to the left.
TV shows, row 2, column 4. Movies, row 2, column 3. Podcasts, row 2, column 2. App Store, row 2, column 1.
And we are at the beginning of the second row. And I can now swipe down into the third row and once again go forwards through the row by swiping to the right. But depending which way you navigate, you can choose whatever works best for you. But it's important to keep in mind that there are four main navigation gestures rather than two. Now, how do you double tap on the Apple TV? It is fairly simple. You simply press the trackpad. So let's swipe back up to the TV app.
TV, row 1, column 1, top shelf content available.
Now, in order to double tap, I will press on the trackpad and it will click as a button would, which you'll be able to hear.
Menu, watch now, tab, 1 of 5.
And we are in the TV app now, and here I've got watch, tab, 1 of 5. Now, in order to go through the tabs in this app, I can swipe to the right through the row of 5 tabs, just like I did in the home screen. And to explore the content of the tab, I simply need to swipe down with one finger.
The Morning Show, the Emmy-registered winning hit, returns the 13th of September on Apple TV+.
So there we go. It's currently showing me The Morning Show that I can watch. Now, there are different sections here on the screen, and the good thing is you can explore each section separately. So I will swipe down again, and it should take me to the next section.
Up next, new, middle dot, S64, E168, Coronation Street, new S64, E168, ITVX, 1 of 25.
So as you've heard, this is the up next section, which tells you what programs you are currently watching and what are the next episodes available. This is where you can easily keep up with the shows that you are watching, which is very handy because if I now press the trackpad on this particular program, it would not only open ITVX, it would start playing this episode. So it's quite a quick way and making the process a bit simpler. And that's the benefit of the TV app in this case in particular. Now, most of the apps on the Apple TV do have audio description, but depending on which app you are using, you might have to turn on audio description inside that app. Some apps will stick to the audio description setting in the main Apple TV settings, but that is more on an app per app basis. Now I will swipe down again.
Top chart, Apple TV Plus, 1, hijack, thriller, button, 1 of 25.
So we are into the next section. So as you can hear, the navigation is fairly simplified here, where you don't have to go through every single section just to get to the next section. So I didn't have to swipe through all of the programs in the up next section to get to the top chart section. I can simply skip the entire section by swiping down, and I can swipe left and right to explore each section. And that's all it is to the Apple TV navigation, pretty much. Naturally, some apps will work differently than others, but most apps pretty much rely on a similar navigation system. Now, if you want to go back to the home screen, we do have the home button on the Apple TV, which I'll press now.
TV, row 1, column 1, top shelf content available. Swipe up for full screen.
And this was basically the Apple TV demo. I have showed you a few main things that you probably need to remember to explore the rest on your own. This Apple TV does have Siri also, so you can use Siri to speak your requests. It is fairly limited, but you can always give it a try and see what it does. You can also ask it to open apps on the Apple TV. So that is, in a nutshell, a fairly simple demonstration of the Apple TV. There are certainly more functions you can do on it, so if there's anything more that you would like to know, or if there is a specific app on the Apple TV you'd like to see how you can use it, get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and we will be happy to do further demonstrations on the Apple TV. Now it's time to put the Apple TV to sleep, and the simple way to do it is to hold down the home button.
Sleep button, 1 of 4.
It's a sleep button, 1 of 4, and all I have to do is click the trackpad to go and put the Apple TV to sleep.
Hubert Pavalkovich there with his demonstration of the Apple TV set-top box. Always important to emphasise, it is not a TV. You need something to plug it into. Hubert and Callum join me now. Gentlemen, it's been around a while, but it just remains probably one of the more accessible options when it comes to accessing streaming TV services. Hubert, do you think anything else comes close?
I think from my experience, the other probably second closest is, I would say, the Amazon Fire Stick, because it has its built-in voice view screen reader and it does read most of the stuff. And quite a few apps are accessible, but I pointed out in the demo, for example, the iPlayers are not, but in majority, I would say, from my experience, that's probably what I would put in second place in terms of accessibility.
Now, Callum Stoneman, your partner is sighted. Mine isn't, obviously. You're younger and better looking than I am. But when we're watching TV, even as a blind couple, we tend to put the screen on. And obviously, you need to do that. But if your partner's out and you're sort of listening to something on the TV on your own, do you put the screen on? Do you bother with that?
I do, to be honest, mainly just out of habit, to be completely honest. I just kind of forget, you know, so I'll just switch the TV on as normal and just, you know, switch on voiceover and just use it as I normally would. I don't really know what it is. I don't know if it's the nature of Apple's ecosystem, because they do make it really easy for developers to, or reasonably easy, for developers to kind of cross-platform their apps. So, you know, I wonder if it's because on iOS, if you've got an app that's accessible and you use Apple's, you know, inbuilt tools to help you port that over to the Apple TV, I think that might carry the accessibility over with it as well, which is a huge plus, you know, as far as accessibility goes.
I mean, there are differences, and the reason I asked you the question about the screen is sometimes I have Netflix on my phone, and I've worked out that if I lock the phone and then on the lock screen press the play button, I can actually have my phone locked in my pocket and listen to Netflix sometimes even at, you know, 1.5 or, you know, double speed or something like that, and that can be a way of binging, you know, a series while you're doing sort of jobs around the house. There are differences though. Some of the streaming services offer audio description on iOS, but not necessarily on Apple TV.
And that was the case on ITVX. For a while, it was not, the audio description was not available on the Apple TV. It's only come in recently, and there's a few like that. I mean, I don't know, Callum, what you think of this?
Yeah, I think that's one of the occasions where sometimes, I mean, some streaming services block you from doing this as well, but that's sometimes where the AirPlay functionality of the Apple TV comes in useful. Because if you can find the audio description, as Dave was saying earlier, on the phone and then just AirPlay it to the Apple TV, then sometimes you can get around it that way. But I don't think you can do that with the other streaming options, can you? With the Amazon Fire Stick, I don't think there's a similar way to do that.
Well, that's a question for you, dear listener. Let us know what you are using, and we're always interested in alternatives. Of course, there are multiple solutions and streaming devices and smart TVs and set-top boxes out there. So please do let us know what works well for you and what's not working well as well, so we can maybe just have a little word in the ear of some of those manufacturers. Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, thank you very much. We are at the end of another Tech Talk. That's it. We are out of time. Thank you so much for sticking with us. And if you like what you hear, do tell a friend. Tech Talk, of course, you can catch us each Tuesday at 1 p.m. here on RNIB Connect Radio. And don't forget to grab that podcast, RNIB Tech Talk, in all the usual podcast places. Callum Stoneman, hope you're feeling a little bit better soon.
I'll be fine.
He'll be fine. All right. Well, thank you so much. Hubert, thank you for your input this week. And hopefully we'll hear from you both again. Coming up next week on Tech Talk, we'll be hearing more from Drew Mochak from Meta. And we will hear about new products arriving in the RNIB Products for Life store. So do tune in then. If you want to get in contact with Tech Talk, don't forget it's our email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we love a voice note, so give it a go. All right, for myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.